Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 357 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. Playing hurt a little bit today. I have a really bad cold slash flu, so I apologize for the quality of my voice. And in fact, that has led me to not be able to record an episode this week. So I thought what we would do is repeat one of our classic rewind, so to speak, episodes from the past. And it's particularly apropos, frankly, particularly for me, because I'm going to invite Greg Garman back onto the podcast here. He originally appeared on episode 222. That was a nice ring to him, right? Episode 222 on the 13th of July in 2020. And Greg is the CEO of a company called Law Clerk, which provides legal services for hire by admitted members of the bar. So you can use a virtual law clerk, a virtual associate, if you will, to round out your staffing needs. And in my particular case, my practice has expanded to the point where I need to bring somebody on board. I'm not ready to bring somebody on board full time, and so I'm going to be turning to Law Clerk to add a staff member via that route. And so something I'm contemplating, and I thought this would be a good time to repeat Greg's previous episode for others to consider as well. So without any further delay, reappearing from episode 222 is Greg Garman.
Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 222 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And that's episode 222, not the old school TV program Room 222, for those of you old enough to remember that. But anyway, on episode 222, my guest today is Greg Garman. Now, if that name rings a bell, you might remember him as being our guest way back on episode 123. So there's a lot of kind of symbolic references here in the episodes that Greg's been on, episode 123 and episode 222. But anyway, Greg is the CEO and founder of a company called Law Clerk, which provides outsourcing of legal services, actually attorneys, freelance attorneys, and is a platform on which you go online and you can hire freelance attorneys to round out your team or complete a project, or you can offer your services as a freelancer. And I've done both on the platform and find it to be really useful for both my practice and also for, you know, just the work that I like to do and round out my day. And so Greg and I are going to talk about how the company and the platform has evolved from its original mission to now really providing the backbone and the underpinnings of building out solo and small firms, using their resources as kind of the back end. And it's an interesting discussion. I always enjoy talking with Greg. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. So without any further delay, here is Greg Garman. Greg Garman, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Neil, thanks so much for having me. You were actually the first show that had me on after we launched Law Clerk, and I couldn't be happier to be back.
Well, I am delighted to have you back. For our listeners who have been keeping score here, Greg's a returning champion, having been on the podcast back in episode 123, which ironically is just about 2 years to the day from when this episode is going to be published and go live. And that was just, as you said, a couple months after you launched the company, Law Clerk. And I know that we first met at the ABA Tech Show in 2018 in Chicago. And I think that might very well have been, was that your launch site for the company?
It was. That was, we'd beta tested before that, but that was our national launch. And it's kind of a special time in our history. I remember that very well.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, I always roam the vendor floor at the ABA Tech Show, and I'm looking for just new ideas about the legal space, technology in the legal space, and what people are doing, what companies are doing. And I remember when we met, there was a smattering of companies that were getting into the virtual assistant or offsite legal support, but there weren't a whole lot. And most of them were dealing with the non-legal positions, the virtual paralegals, the virtual support staff, and the like. And as I recall, that Law Clerk was one of the first to deal with using attorneys and using them remotely to supplement your practice. So let's talk about the origins briefly, kind of just revisit that to put things in context, and then we can get into how the company has expanded and gone in some additional directions.
Yeah, no. So practicing lawyer, I'm a practicing lawyer. I spent 20 years at a regional law firm, working my way up to be the managing partner. And about 5 years ago, last month, I left with a handful of lawyers from the firm to open a boutique because we concluded that smaller was better for a whole lot of reasons. And really, the idea of Law Clerk came to me and my co-founders because when we left a bigger platform, you know, it was nice to have a securities lawyer down the hall. It was nice to have a tax lawyer down the hall, but it's not good for business. They tend to be underperforming when you look at the statistics of kind of those service partners. And so the idea and the business model came to be one in which originally, the idea was that, you know, 3 out of every 4 lawyers in the country are solos or small firm lawyers, and giving them additional resources in a world of specialization that they could make money on was the original idea. And we really tapped into a market that was looking for a solution. And we've had a really loyal and growing customer base, and we've started to expand, you know, from just the single project work that people were doing to really being the infrastructure on which lawyers have started to build their firms. And so it's really great, Neil, to be back to kind of tell you about how the last couple of years have gone and the growth we've seen and the changes we've made. And I'm proud of what we've done to help lawyers grow their firms.
Well, you should be. And it is one of those things, I think success comes to people who recognize the opportunity and are committed to finding a solution to people's problems. But at the same time, there's a certain amount of, you know, reaction to the world around us. And I'm not sure that I would say that's luck or being in the right place at the right time. I think it's recognizing the forces and the movements that are going on. And 2 years ago, and actually when you were kind of planning this all out, 3 and 4 years ago, things were really coming together to make the concept or the idea of being able to work with somebody remotely a more feasible solution. Of course, now in the days of the pandemic, every Tom, Dick, and Harry is working remotely and having a Zoom conference such as ours. But, you know, again, 3, 4, 5 years ago, that was not quite on the cutting edge, but it was kind of new. And people were trying to figure out how to use that in a business model. And I think, A, that's one thread that you started tugging on. And then B, we've got, as you said, we've got a lot of solo and small firm attorneys or looking at how can I add revenue to my practice, because I haven't quite built it up to the point yet where I'm self-sustaining on simply my client base alone. So I'd like to get some additional work in here, but I don't want to commit long-term to working for somebody else in a of counsel position or what have you. I'd like to really be able to use, for lack of a better word, a service that can provide me a qualified, trained attorney in this specific area that I'm looking for this one project, this one matter. And that's the kind of forces, the threads of life that you were tugging on that I think have been woven together to create Law Clerk and create its success.
Yeah. You know, at the outset, I tell my kids that, so I'm a huge believer in luck. You can't downplay the importance of luck, but I do tell my kids that you make your own luck to a large part. And you don't do it in any way other than, you know, there's some people who get three or four bats in life and you need to make the most of it. And you can make your own luck by getting more and more and just sort of staying in the mix. And so we were at the right place at the right time. The pandemic is terrible, but, you know, there are certain businesses that have done better than others in a pandemic. And Law Clerk is one of them because, you know, it wasn't that long ago that people, when they heard of Uber, they said, "You want me to get in a stranger's car?"
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, get home, or it was before the pandemic. It was get home safe, take an Uber. And we sort of had the same issue with Law Clerk, which is changing attorney consumer preferences. And it was, "You want me to work with an associate who's working from their house or working remotely?" Like, that's the question we got. And you know, the last couple of months have certainly demonstrated that law gets done remotely just as well, and in some ways better than if everybody's in the same office. And yeah. So, you know, I don't want to call the pandemic luck, but I certainly am not going to shy away from the fact that, you know, this was the moment for Law Clerk to shine. And we've never seen more projects. We've never seen more attorneys. We've never seen more more money get paid to our freelancers than over the last couple of months.
So let's talk about then how this kind of whole the structure works. Then we'll move into the concept of the Law Clerk team. So the platform Law Clerk provides services to both those who are hiring and those who are looking to be hired. So talk a little bit about that difference, how it manifests itself in the use of the Law Clerk platform and yeah, how we put the two together.
Yeah. So first and foremost, we, you know, we're practicing lawyers. We understand the ethical rules. We're not attempting to tackle this business in a way in which we get between a lawyer and their client. You know, that's where state bars have, you know, cracked down on companies like LegalZoom and others for trying to get in the middle of that relationship. We know how sacred that is. We have clients. And so Law Clerk was built to be the back office for solos and smalls and an ever-growing number of larger firms, in which fundamentally we live in a world of specialization. And, you know, if that to the half of the lawyers in the world that are solo practitioners and the three quarters of us that are in smaller firms, you know, we have clients who come through the door and they you know, Neil, you're a wills and trusts, but you have a client base that I'm sure they come through the door some days and they say, "I need a lease," or "I've got this piece of litigation," or, you know, whatever the case may be, "I need a contract." And you can do it. You're certainly qualified to prepare a lease. And I'm sure you know how to do it. But the reality is it's not your highest and best use. And in a world of specialization, solos and small firms, they don't have the luxury of having a litigation associate and a corporate associate and a real estate associate and an associate who has wills and trusts. And so with the platform, we're a place where you can go find just those people. And instead of having fixed full-time overhead that would make them not profitable, you pay them only when you need them. They make a good living. You can make your profit and bill their time out at a profit, just the way you would an associate. And so we really think it's a win-win situation. And, you know, the site is exclusively limited to U.S.-based graduates of ABA-accredited law schools who are licensed lawyers here in the United States. You have to be that to be on both sides of the equation.
Yep.
And so philosophically, we're a marketplace to connect those people.
And let me give you just a couple of real-world examples from my own experience with Law Clerk. So as you said, I do trust in the states. You know, I've had a couple of opportunities to take advantage of the platform personally. One in which I was advising a client who owned their own business, a closely held corporation, and part of the estate plan. You know, we talked about the importance of having a really solid succession plan for his business. And, you know, the question was, well, can you help me write that? But look, I know enough about it to describe its importance to the overall aspects of your estate plan and the protection of your assets. But I'm not the best person, and it would take me a little bit of time to get up to speed, to do the research and do the work necessary to draft a plan and review it with you. And so that was a perfect opportunity to use somebody from Law Clerk. And it turned out they weren't from my jurisdiction. So they had to write it in a way that was adaptable to my needs. And we discussed then what I would have to do to make sure that it was 100% compliant with Maryland law. And so that was a perfect symbiotic relationship. I was doing enough work to justify in my own mind, and in case anybody asked, having a markup on the cost of the law clerk associate who actually did the work. That's a perfect example.
So, Neil, I think that is a perfect example. And here's why. So, you know, when I look at that, you had a trusted client, and that trusted client asked you to be the quarterback of their legal needs. And part of that fell within, you know, your core emphasis of your primary practice. And some of it fell outside of it. But the client still wanted you and your judgment to be the guy who quarterbacked this through the end of the day. And that's what successful lawyers with books of business have, is they have those clients. But in a world of ever increasing specialization, you needed to rely upon, you know, somebody who had this sliver of knowledge that you could do, but it wasn't perfect for you. At the end of the day, you know, you had to be comfortable that the work product was there and correct and right. And, you know, you had to put your name on it. But that's the perfect example of a way in which our users are beginning to expand their practices in a way that can make them more profitable and not have to send their clients down the street. And, you know, we love hearing those stories. And, you know, when we started, there were very, very few projects going through the site. And, you know, now we've grown by 50 or 100 times. And the amount of firms, the number of firms who are literally building the infrastructure on top of what we supply grows by the day. And it's just the most exciting thing I've ever done in my whole life.
And from a pragmatic standpoint, what it became glaringly obvious to me was this was a economically not just feasible, but profitable endeavor. Because had I said, okay, this was a great client and there's a potential that they will go on to be a referral source for me, and therefore I'm willing to maybe to do all the work to learn how to do a succession plan in better detail. It may have been a loss leader for me then. I take a profitable legal matter and turn it into maybe a break even or a loss leader because I'm developing a skill that I can use down the road. But what happens if I don't do that again? If I don't have that opportunity again? All I've really done now is taking money off the table, whereas using Law Clerk to provide that added capability, I didn't lose money. In fact, I made money because I did, you know, the 10% of the work that was necessary to tailor it to Maryland's needs, and so it made economic sense.
And if I might be a little more pointed than that, Neil, really what happened was you took the inefficiency out of the process, which was it would be inefficient for you to have to go learn this to provide it to your client, where you found somebody who knew it. And by taking the inefficiency out of the process, you kept the profit. You paid a freelancer who was then employed and made some money. And really
good
what
money.
Happened was
the good money.
Yeah, really what happened was the overhead and inefficiency in the process was stripped out for the benefit of you and the client at the end of the day.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, Lexaclara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's 5 or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top-line revenue to bottom-line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client, and I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
So I think what happened then is that people like myself, people who are looking to have projects satisfied for them by law clerk, suddenly said, well, look, if this is an opportunity, there's got to be others. And what if I put together a group? Because one of the challenges is, if I had to do this over again, I would not necessarily be guaranteed to get the same person writing that plan for me next time. They may not be available. They may have moved on to other things. It doesn't mean that it's less useful, but that's the reality of kind of the dynamics of people moving around and having other things to do. But I think some firms said, well, what if I could put together a team of people that would supplement my core practice area. And now I have a little more of a dedicated staff. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that's how the concept of law clerk teams came about.
Yeah, it is. So what happened was that in some ways we were a victim of our own success, in that our best users, our power users who, you know, are running their entire practices on law clerk said, I know who I'm going to give this to. Why do I have to put it in the marketplace and and send it out to the world and get 20 people who want to work on it. I know who's going to work on it at the end of the day. And so we set out to build additional tools. And the tools we built, ended up being what we call Lockwork Teams. And with Lockwork Teams, you can build a firm of, we call them virtual associates, that are kind of as broad or as narrow as you want. And what we found is that, the general practitioners who have a diverse practice, they tend to find 6 or 7 or 8 different freelancers that they want to work with on a regular basis. And, they get a young litigator to do discovery work, and they, find a mid-level real estate lawyer to pass that work off to. And, it wasn't quite half the work that went through the site last month, but it was pretty close to half the work that went through the site, never made its way to the marketplace, and went directly to someone on the team. And it's also a way in which lawyers, work a whole case with someone. They do the complaint and then they do the discovery and they go back to the same person. And more often than not, the description we see go through the site is, as we discussed on the phone, or do it the same way you did it last time. And, the efficiency of the process is immense. And they're some of our greatest success stories. We have people who, not every day, but post a project almost every day, because we're the basis of how they get work done and how they make, how they have leverage and how they make a profit. We got a call not too long ago from one of our users who called up the support line and said, "Hey, I'm just checking in to see how you guys are doing, because you can't close down because I have no way to replace you, and it would undermine my firm." And
sanity check to make sure you're going to be around.
Yeah. And, that was a heartwarming call, because, we set out to make the lives of lawyers better based upon our own experience. And I'm really happy and proud that that's what we're doing.
The analogy to being the Uber or Lyft of lawyer services is not exactly spot on, but it's more true than not true. So let's talk about a little bit of the mechanics here so people can round out the picture. Who sets the price for the project?
So that's a really important issue, because we're not the only ones in the world. Bringing the gig economy to legal is not even super novel. It's just we were able to do it, and we were able to build a technology that was 50 state ethically compliant, and that's actually the distinguishing factor from a lot of the other people in this space. But We're a marketplace, and we connect people. And so we philosophically believe that the posting attorney and the freelancer, they need to work out how much is going to be paid. And so very, very early on, probably the earliest, most important decision we made was that this wasn't going to be a system in which a posting attorney said, "I need a motion for summary judgment," and they would receive bids from the freelance lawyers, because that has the effect of a race to the bottom.
Absolutely.
And we didn't want that. Our goal wasn't to undermine the economics of legal. Our goal was to make it more efficient and to allow everybody to make a living. And so the system works that the posting attorney, they decide how much they're going to pay. And it goes out into the network of the freelance lawyers, thousands and thousands of them. And if it's a real estate project, let's say it's a contract for the sale of a house, it goes out into the network of people who've identified themselves as having an emphasis in that area. They get a text message, they get an email that says, "This is the project, this is the scope of it, and this is how much it pays." And candidly, if you want a young lawyer, it's going to cost you less than if you want somebody to do your Third Circuit appellate brief, for a criminal case in which somebody's life is on the line. And so we are a marketplace. And do we see extremes? Of course we do. We see projects go in the tens of thousands, and then we see projects, that go for a really small amount of money, like $100. More often than not, those $100 ones are like, "I need a blog written for my website so I can do some marketing." But the reality is that the market has to self-regulate itself, but we do provide pricing guidance and recommendations. And you know, our recommendations are pay the freelancer $70, $80, $90 an hour, which is what lawyers who are associates make, then have a reasonable markup so that you can make a profit, take the overhead out of it, and everybody does better. And so, we see extremes, but the reality is that we also see more often than not freelancers, hosting attorneys working together on a regular basis, then they sort it out. And,
what I saw in the beginning or initially was folks who are looking to, to hire somebody trying to lowball it on the premise that, if I say I'm only going to pay $150 for this this product, the reality of it is I can make more money the cheaper it costs me to get this product. But what they found is that you're not going to find a qualified legal attorney who's going to take that job for $150. So it became self-regulating. You had to pay enough to get the expertise that's necessary to do the job. And in the end of the day, that makes for a solid relationship.
There's another hidden truth to that story, though, Neil, also, which is our reputation is everything. And as a young company that no one had ever heard of, I think that people were a little reluctant to give us a try. And I think that as our reputation grows, we see quarter after quarter the average project value increasing. Yeah. It increased average project size or value increased like about $20 last quarter. That kind of happens quarter after quarter. We're up more than $100 on average project size over the last year. And so I do think that as our reputation grows, it will inure to the benefit of the freelancers. And we do everything possible to make sure that everybody is happy on the site. And we do our best to make sure that it's fair. You certainly identified what we see sometimes, which are people who think they can game the system and get something incredible for $150, but it doesn't really happen.
But as with most things, mm-hmm. those who are trying to game the system, the marketplace weeds them out.
It does.
And so if you're trying to game the system, you're not going to get what you need, and so you're going to stop trying. It's really what it happens.
And we have, we have freelancers who've done, literally 300, 400 projects because it's their profession and this is what they do. And they're simply not going to take those projects.
And that's the way they want to run their freelancing business.
Absolutely. And they take what makes economic sense. And so when you want talent, you need to pay a reasonable rate for it. Now, having said that, it is absolutely cheaper to find a specialized freelancer than it is to have an associate that you can't keep busy because you don't have the need for a full-time real estate associate. And so, the economics still are favorable. One of the things I like to tell people is, let me just say, Neil, I'll just use you because you're on the other end of this conversation. But, as you said, you could go out and learn how to do that succession planning. But, just making up numbers, if it takes you 10 hours to learn it, and you can hire somebody who can do it in 3 hours, their efficiency will allow you to pay them a higher effective hourly rate than you spending 10 hours at it and still leaving margin for you to make a profit.
Yeah, without question. Mm-hmm. Without question. So we talked about the growing use of law clerk teams to provide the structure upon which firms are being built. I want to talk about the slight moral question here. And, mm-hmm. Do attorneys have morals? Is that an oxymoron? No, I think they do. So the question is, when we go to that kind of model, are we hurting the legal profession in the sense of creating or limiting the kind of long-term structural basis for the practice of law and making it so commoditized that it's it's kind of like a drive-through process? Or how would you respond to that question?
Yeah, I'm a really, really big believer that we're not. And this is a topic.
Me too, yeah. But I haven't asked the question.
And I like to talk about this because, you know, the gig economy, there is no doubt, absolutely no doubt, that the gig economy has taken some industries and purposefully and intentionally driven down the cost or the wage in a way that's bad. Market dynamics can be positive and they can be negative. Here's why I really fundamentally believe we're in a different spot, though. Half the lawyers in the country are solo practitioners. When their clients come through the door, they really don't have the ability to have five more attorneys on staff. You don't have the ability to have a litigator. You don't have the ability to have an estate planning associate. And the reality is that it's not as if those were positions that people are being fired from and being replaced by freelancers. This is a way to expand the small firm from something it's not currently doing.
Yeah.
And so that's the first side of it. And the second side is probably more important. 6 out of 10 lawyers leave private practice before their fifth year. That's a staggering number of us who said, working 60 hours a week, because it's a hard profession, isn't compatible with my life plan. I got parents who need taken care of. I've got children that I want to have and raise. I have a few hours in the afternoon. I have the ability to do work once they've been put to sleep. Traditionally, legal hasn't been open to those sorts of associates. And so they've had to go out and find their own way to kind of create a different type of living for themselves. And so freelancing's not new. Contract lawyers have been working for, you know, big law firms for decades now. So, you know, our freelancers are people who made a decision that this is the life they want to live because of a whole host of personal reasons. And they had to find their own way in the world before. They had to find their way of getting hired. They, you know, weren't, there was no model for this before. If you didn't want to sit in an office 8 to 12 hours a day, 50 weeks a year, and make the sacrifices. There's this interesting group of freelancers we have that are military spouses. You know, the husband or the wife is a high-ranking military officer who moves around every 2, 3, or 4 years. If you're the spouse, you can't go take a bar exam and open a firm with the expectation you're going to get a take a new job or open a new firm every 2 or 3 or 4 years. So, yeah, of course we have people who you know find that they couldn't get the job they wanted in a competitive hiring market, but the overwhelming bulk of our freelancers are people who, you know, this is the decision they made. They're solos or small firms that have a couple extra hours and they want to, you know, supplement their work. Got law school professors who work during the breaks, and we've got freelancers who are retired partners at the 10 largest firms in the world who absolutely don't need the money, but they want to stay in the game mentally.
Yeah. And I can think of all those women who have had to make that difficult choice. You know, what do I do? I want to raise a family. I want a legal profession. How do I balance those issues? This to me, and guys too, but statistically, it affects women more than it does the fathers here. This is a way to give me an opportunity to, as you say, stay in the game and to manage my legal profession around what's important to me, my family.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So that's why, Neil, I don't, you know, we don't have stories of, you know, we're going to fire our associates and replace them with law clerks. We have nearly exclusively stories of, wow, you helped me to expand my business in a way that drove revenue that I just didn't have before.
Yeah. And I think that's the genesis of the success of law clerk. Because if it was the other way around, there would be, you know, the kind of the Amazon effect. You drove every mom and pop bookstore out of business so you could sell, you know, books online, which, don't get me wrong, I love Amazon, but there is that negative connotation to it. If that was hanging around law clerk, you wouldn't be as successful as you are.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do it, candidly. Yeah. Lawyers, you know, we have this sign in the office talking about what our values are. And I'm a big believer that lawyers make the world a better place. We really, there are a lot of bad lawyers who give us a bad reputation, but at the end of the day, I'm proud to be a lawyer and I'm proud of what we have been able to do for the world and making, we're the cornerstone of the economy, the rule of law, access to justice, access to the courts. You know, we struggle with all those issues in this economy, but at the end of the day, the world is better off for having us in it, and I believe that we help facilitate commerce, and we want to support lawyers.
Yeah, and I certainly think so. That's why I am both a client and a project source for in Law Clerk. I wear both hats, and I find it to be very useful. And I did that way before you and I actually had our first conversation. So. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see this journey, and I'm happy to have an opportunity to chat with you about it. Along the way, I know you also put together some resources that manifested them itself into a book. You want to talk about the book a little bit?
So we put together the Ultimate Guide to Outsourcing, and it's a pretty dense ebook that you can find on our website. And our goal was. Lawyers are slow to adapt. We're slow to change. Our economic models are, I think, appropriately conservative in their evolution because there's a lot at stake. Our clients' interests are at stake. But we put together an ebook to how to use outsourcing, whether it be with us or in some other fashion, so that lawyers can improve their bottom line and to teach lawyers how to do it. And our goal was to help lawyers, help attorneys, help firms get better work product to their clients at the end of the day, cheaper and faster, but equally as important, make as much, if not more money than they did before. And so we're really proud of the Ultimate Guide that we put out. And we encourage, whether you want to work with Law Clerk or not, we encourage lawyers to read it because I think that we're a profession that really, really wants to consume information about how to improve our business models. But, you know, there's not a lot out there that is detailed and not just high level fluff.
And I will tell you, it was just the point I was going to make, that that the ebook is, as you said, it's chock full of good content, good info. Mm-hmm. It's not one of these where you took, you know, 10 blog posts and put a cover on it and called it an ebook. It's actually a very useful guide. And so I encourage our listeners, if you're at all contemplating using freelance contract attorneys, and I would highly suggest Law Clerk as a platform, and get this guide. We'll have the link to it in the show notes. But if you are anxious to get there quickly, you can just go to lawclerk.legal, the website, and you'll find that it's available there. And then I want to also plug here, like most good entrepreneurs, Law Clerks launched a podcast.
Yeah, we're excited about that. So
talk to us about the podcast and what that's all about.
Yeah, so I kind of feel a little guilty coming on your show talking about my own podcast.
All right.
But the Law Clerk's about two things. You know, we provide what we talked about today in the form of a service, but we really are trying to be a place where we can talk about the successful business and practice of law because they're two very different things. And you can't have either without having both. You know, you can't have a good business if you don't have a good practice. And I would certainly advocate that it's tough to have a great practice if you don't know how to run your business. So we launched a podcast called The Successful Business and Practice of Law, presented by Law Clerk. And on the show, we tackle a fairly narrow topic, a piece of that, which is we interview really interesting lawyers who build great practices and businesses, and they talk about both and how they came together. And so we talk a lot about both business and practice on our YouTube channel and on the website and in our blogs and the Ultimate Guide, all those things we are out there, but the podcast is more limited, and I'm really excited. We launched our first episode last week. The next one comes up in about 10 days, We'll see where it goes. It's been fun.
We'll have the link to that as well in the show notes. I encourage you to pop on over there and give the podcast a listen. I mean, I always find that the story is about really interesting practices and how they came about. In part, that's to some degree what we do here, although I think we do a little more than that. But those are kind of fun things. It's fun to think about. And, oh my God, you built a practice around that concept? That sounds great. And right. So that's what I think is more in store on your podcast, and I can't wait to continue to listen to it. So, Greg, tell our audience one last time how they can reach out to you if they have any questions or anything they want to follow up regarding what you had to share with us today.
Yeah, so I love to hear both from people who've used Law Clerk, but equally as much people who are kind of interested in changing their business model. You can find the company at lawclerk.legal, but the two easiest ways to reach me are still kind of old school via email, which is ggarman, G-G-A-R-M-A-N, at lawclerk.legal, or I am on Twitter at Greg underscore Garmin, and then LinkedIn, you can find me too. But I love hearing from people, I did hear from some of your guests last time I was on, Neil, and really thought it was great.
Well, I do appreciate having you on and taking the time to be with us today. It's always a joy to talk to you, and every time I stop by the booth at Tech Show, I always enjoy our time together. And I couldn't be more pleased that you found such time to be with us today. So. Once again, Greg, thanks for being a guest here today on The Law Entrepreneur.
It really was my pleasure, Neil, and hopefully you'll have me back in another couple of years.
Absolutely.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them, and I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, NetProfit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client, and then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So, very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at NetProfit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.